Welcome to the Home Health Revealed podcast, brought to you by HealthRev Partners. Join your hosts, Michael Greenlee and me, Hannah Vale, as we dive into the world of home health, hospice, and palliative care services. Each episode features real stories and insights from industry leaders covering everything from innovative technologies and payer negotiations to quality improvement and clinician safety. Whether you're a seasoned professional or new to the field, our podcast offers valuable knowledge to help you provide the best care for your patients. Tune in and be part of the conversation on Home Health Revealed.
Welcome to Home Health Revealed podcast. I'm your host, Mike Greenlee. And like always, Hannah Vale is with me. Hannah, what's a happening?
Hello. Hey, not much. How are you?
Well, I'm good. You know, so I am, I've got a new mission. You want to know what that is?
Yeah.
So I'm on, we sold all of our weight equipment because we were going to buy this one weight machine is all we need. It's called the OxFit, I think is the name of it. Okay. This thing had 268 exercises on it. They said it would ship in 1 to 3 weeks. I'm 10 weeks into buying this thing. I don't have it. So I've returned it and I still don't have my refund.
So you never got it?
Never got it. They said it ships in 1 to 3 weeks. I'm like 10 weeks in. I still don't have the machine. So finally, and that's depressing because I was going to get big, you know, muscular, you know, fit, all those things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now I'm just still just daydreaming about it.
But you already got rid of all your other weight equipment.
That's it. So now I got to buy other weight equipment.
You could just use gallon jugs because they're 8 pounds a piece. And then you drink it as you go. And then by the time you drink all your gallon of water and you've lifted those weights, you're in really great shape every day.
Yeah, I think that's a horrible idea. Hey, no, I'm just kidding.
Just something worth mentioning.
Well, hey, we got a great show.
We do.
It's not all about my muscles here. You know what I mean?
We got some
things to talk about.
Hey, we've not, since you came up here for the golf outing, we've not done a podcast since then. So I want you to talk about your experience at Cedar Point.
It was a lot of roller coasters, which I like roller coasters. I don't like waiting in lines. So I would, next time I like, I'll have a little VIP pass. You know what I mean? So I just get up there, get on there and do my thing. But it was actually amazing. I enjoyed it. So thank you for taking me there. It was fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. It was fun to watch you.
Do we write four or five?
Yeah, because we ate the bugs. Well, I'm going to put out a video. I'm working on a reel to put out a video of our experience. It has nothing to do with this podcast, but it's going to be Home Health Revealed takes on the North Coast.
Well, so we went on this roller coaster that went, 92 miles per hour? Is that right?
Yeah.
And
dropped 310 feet. It was Millennium Force.
Yeah. What they didn't tell you, though, is at nighttime, there's these little bitty flies, whatever they are, gnats.
They're gnats.
And when we got off this ride, we had them stuck to our face. I ate like, half a dozen of them.
We were covered.
You know? So I get off this roller coaster with all kinds of protein in my system and on my face. So it was quite an interesting ride. And those kind of hurt going at 92 miles per hour, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually part of the ride. I've never had that happen before.
I thought it was the girl's hair in front of me just slapping me in the face. I didn't know it was like bugs. You know what I mean? So not only am I going 92 miles per hour, and I'm not driving this thing, is I got this hair that's hitting me in the face. I got bugs flying at me. I don't even know where all this stuff's coming from. And I couldn't get off this roller coaster fast enough. That's the only
really
one I didn't
fun.
They should give you really goggles. Fun. They should give you goggles.
That's
give
a great goggles. Idea, actually.
92 miles per hour, you need goggles. And maybe a parachute, just in case something goes down.
Yeah, face, though, on the picture was great. I can't wait to share it.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to share it either. I'm sure it's awesome. but we got a great show.
We got
a great guest. I know you're going to introduce him a little bit here, but we're going to be talking about audits.
Mm-hmm.
No one even likes that word. That's just a bad word, audit.
It is.
Like, you think audit, you think IRS, you think, I don't know, your wife, you know, she's going to audit you, make sure you're a good husband. Maybe not. I don't know. But we're going to talk a little bit about home health audits.
Yeah. With Annette Lee. So I'm really excited to introduce our audience to Annette Lee, RNMSHCSD COSC. She's got a lot of accreditations behind her name. She's a registered nurse with a master's in healthcare administration, practicing since 1990, with the majority of her nursing experience in home health and hospice. For over a decade, she worked with the CMS Medicare Administrative Contractor, which we know as MAC, on home health and hospice reimbursement, coverage, and documentation. Annette then founded Provider Insights Incorporated out of a need in the industry to translate quote unquote Medicare ease into language agencies could understand and assists providers daily with ADRs, appeals, and survey preparation. She marries together her experience in the real world and the inside knowledge of Medicare to ensure providers can meet the requirements of CMS and ensure compliant, efficient operations. Annette presents and consults nationally on the conditions of participation, so COPs, survey, OASIS, PDGM, audits, quality measures, and documentation and coverage for both the home health and hospice benefits. Annette holds both the Certificate of OASIS Specialist Clinical and the Home Care Coding Specialist Diagnosis Certification. Welcome to the show, Annette.
Thank you so much, Hannah. I'm sorry, that was a mouthful, but thank you so much. And hello, Michael.
Hi, Annette. Thanks for joining us. I've always got to ask the first question here. I see that you started your own company.
Yes, sir.
And so what drove you to say, you know what, you like this, and now I'm going to start a company to help other agencies?
You know, it was actually, I think it was just a moment in time that was fate, because I was speaking at the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization at NHPCO, and I was talking about, you know, the real world and how sometimes folks, you know, don't really understand the Medicare expectation when it comes to audits, because that's different from survey. We have the COPs for survey, but the audits is where I really, you know, was working at that time, working for the MAC, and it's confusing having multiple rule books. And so someone actually came up to me and said, you know, if you could do this, like, as a business, and you could really share both sides of the coin with us, because when you work for the government, you only get to say what they like say.
That's right.
She said, if you can do this, right, if you can marry this together, it would be so helpful. And I came home and told my husband, I was like, that would be a great idea, but there's no way. And he said, do it. And I did. And
it's
so that, you know,
good,
yeah,
man right there.
That's right. He said, do, yeah, it. I'll put you on my insurance and away we go. And that's
there
what we
you
did.
Go. So, that's a great story.
Yes.
Well, we're glad you did it. We're glad you're with us. We're going to bomb some questions at you today, though. You ready?
Great. Yeah, I am.
Make sure you got a good night's sleep. So let's start with the first question. How frequently do MACs typically conduct audits for home health agencies?
Great question to start with. So the MACs, the folks that actually pay our Medicare claims, they are enacting a process called Targeted Probe and Educate. And so while it may not be a large percentage of providers that are on those audits, when it hits us hard. Things stop, right? You get at least 20 to 40 claims selected. And for a smaller agency, that's a huge burden. So I was smiling when you were talking about your weightlifting, Michael, because I was thinking of the analogies here with heavy lifting, right? Heavy lifting and your roller coasters, that you feel like you're on a roller coaster with these things. So yeah, it is, it's based on data. So if we stand out at all, so we should be very mindful of what do we look like compared to the rest of the average, you know, home health agency or hospice. Because if we stand out, they want to know why. You might not be doing anything wrong, but they want to know why you're different. And so they will select you for these probe and educates. And maybe even more concerning are the whole smattering of other auditors out there now doing post-pay audits. So the criteria are the same as far as, you know, what their audit includes, but it's just such a large increase in the industry for the burden right now of the audits, because it's the MAC and it's, you know, everyone else joining in. But the MACs are the ones we hear about the most, because it stops the payment before it ever happens. You have to send in that record before they pay you.
You know, you mentioned, yes, the Target Probe and Educate. Is there a list that I would know that I'm on, or how do I know if I want to prevent a Target Probe and Educate? Is there certain data I should be looking at and say, okay, I got to improve this or improve that in order not to be hit with that?
Yeah, great question. There aren't lists. You won't know until you get the letter from the MAC. But when you mention prevention, absolutely. So the government gives us free every year but this year they're late, a report called the Pepper Report, and it's pepper.cbr.org, I believe. But your Pepper Report, you'll get an email saying, hey, this is ready for you. Those are the same reports that the MACs get, and they are looking for folks at that 80th percentile. So all of this data is about our billing. So it'll look at what's your normal length of stay versus the rest of the country? What's your top diagnoses? What does your case mix look like? Because there are contributing factors from our patient assessments that can increase payment. And so, of course, that's what we want when it's appropriate, but they're wanting to know if you're higher than the average bear, why? And so the Pepper Report is a huge, I would say a mitigator of your risk. If we are monitoring that and we want to be in that nice, comfy middle, normally home health agencies' Pepper Reports are released in July. This year it's been delayed, and right now the website still just says it's being delayed. In fact, there was a request for information from the government saying, hey, if you can give us more ideas of what you want to see, let us know. So right now we are hoping by the end of the year.
And then on this Pepper Report, I've seen a couple of them, but is there certain things they need to be looking at, or what do agencies mainly do with those Pepper Reports?
You bet. So you will look at yourself, and they put it in a really nice, easy visual. So you are going to be the blue bar graph, and they'll give you historical data for 3 years. You're looking at your own changes. That's important to know kind of where you're heading. Also, you really want to pay attention to the red lines. So there's three red lines, and that's the 80th percentile for your state, the nation, and your jurisdiction. And when they say jurisdiction, that means your MAC. And to me, that's the most important one, because when I worked at the MAC, we looked at folks that exceeded that 80th percentile compared to the other folks that billed to us. So if we're above that red line, we want to really drill down and do a deep dive to determine why. And do we have the documentation to back that up, or do we need to change up the process?
Yeah. So they're coming to visit, I'm getting audited. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, they're surprise visits, aren't they? They just show up, right? And all of a sudden your day's ruined, or how's this work?
Well, typically they don't actually even show up. We just get notification that they're going to do these audits. We provide the documentation, and you can do that through the MACs portal. So that's the best way to do that now. But what they'll do is they will suspend the claim. Normally claims go through these little checks and balances and just come out at the end and pay. Medicare is really a system of trust, and it is kind of a pay and chase model that, they typically just pay us at face value. But our records, our charts are really our bill of sale. They're the proof, right? And so they will suspend these claims after they will warn you. Like you say, there won't be a list, but you'll get a letter saying you've been chosen for targeted probe and educate. So the next time you bill, you expect that they're going to suspend some of those claims and just keep them in a location for 45 days or until you send them the chart. And once you send the chart, they move it to a location where medical review is going to look at that. And that's typically about 30 days that we'll have a receipt of how did that audit come out.
And what specifically are they looking at during the audit?
Yeah, they are looking not at the COPs, not at what surveyors look at. So you might think you're doing awesome because survey was just here, you were successful, but they're looking at the conditions of payment, and that resides in the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual. So a whole different rule book, Chapter 7 for home health, Chapter 9 for hospice, but it tells you what they want to see. First thing they want to see is a valid face-to-face visit, not a form, but a visit for home health that, yes, that patient, for the same reason they need home health, has already been seen in the hospital or SNF or by their doctor for the same reason. So they have a hierarchy of these technical requirements, and then they're looking overall, did the patient really need this? So again, kind of the technicality checkoffs, was the patient homebound, and did they really need home care?
Got it. Now, that manual seems like that's an awesome read.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Great, great nighttime reading.
Yeah. It's a little snoozer, but I will say it was so awesome when I first discovered it as a nurse, because I was told one thing by one leader and then another thing by another leader early on in my career. And I thought, well, I was going by this person. Now I'm being told something different. It's the tiebreaker. It will bust the myths, right? You'll find out what the truth really is, what they pay for.
Yeah.
So speaking of the documentation and finding that source of truth, what advice do you have for agencies to make sure that they're prepared really any time for a potential MAC audit?
So I would say education and empowerment of the team is first and foremost. We don't do enough of that nowadays, as starting out at orientation, preceptorship, making sure that the team understands the real rules and where they come from, not just because Annette says it or Hannah says it, but that, you know, we have that in front of us. But then also there has to be oversight, right? Education without follow-up and oversight, you've wasted your money. So making sure that there is, you know, not 100% audit on all charts, but we need to be spot checking and ensuring that we are providing the right feedback if we're not, you know, if the documentation is missing the mark or not clearly painting that picture.
But you mentioned something that when they are hit with a target probe and educate, that, you know, that goes into suspense status. You said 45 days, is that right? Something like that. How do agencies, let's say I'm an agency and I get audited, and they grab how many charts? 40, 50?
Yeah, 40, up to 40. Yeah.
You start to do some math. Yeah, you start to do some math on that. If you got, you know, that many in suspense status, you're not getting paid on it. I mean, that's got to hurt some cash flow, right? So what do agencies do in that scenario?
It does hurt cash flow. And I think just as important, it hurts your overall team productivity. I mean, you really kind of need almost an FTE just to gather the documentation, review the documentation, ensure the timeliness of submission. So I think a lot of times they do try to solicit some outside support, someone who's been there, done that. I've done a lot of that lately. But also just ensuring that we do have the process already spelled out, because it's not a matter of if, it's all about when am I going to receive an audit. So being prepared, knowing who your key point people are, and that you kind of divide and conquer, right? That there's going to be someone that's going to ensure that they can gather the documents as needed. We're going to have a little table of contents of the order they want things in, which I like to reflect what the reviewer's checklist looks like. That's how my chart's set up, exactly to help them go through, check it off, and hopefully just pay us and be done with that audit as quickly as possible. But you're right, cash flow is impacted. Sometimes with these post-pay audits we're seeing, especially from the RAC and the SMERC, two of the biggest post-pay auditors out there right now from the government, you might see 37 all at once, Michael, which at least with Target and Probe and Educate, they try to do a percentage of what you build, you know, so they're not overburdening you. But boy, those post-pay auditors may come back and ask for $1.5 million all at once.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a big impact.
Yes. I mean, it sounds scary to some degree, right? Especially if you've got, you know, let's say you made some investments into growth or technology and all of a sudden then you're hit. I mean, that could really make you have a bad day. You know what I mean? But so do agencies normally, when they're hit with an audit, do they think about calling someone like you, or kind of what's that process? What should the agencies expect, and what should they do?
So if they haven't had success in this arena before, you know, some folks have been there, done that, and they've got it down. Yeah. But if you haven't been through it, at least find that partner that that you can at least have a guide, right?
Yeah.
So depending on folks, you know, bandwidth and budget, a good partner is going to give you just the right amount of support. There are some folks that just need, you know, here's a table of contents. Here's how to set it up. Let me teach you how to audit using the checklist I'm going to give you. And some folks will run with it and do a great job. Others are going to say, no, I want you to look at every single one. So, you know, again, I think it's important to use the assets you already have. And if you lack in an area, find someone to help you that you can, you know, level up and still be successful.
Yeah. Well, and how many companies are out there like yours? I mean, is there a big option? Is there a big pool to choose from?
There's a lot. There are several big players, right? There's several big players. And I think that there's some a wide variety of kind of mom and pops, if you will. To me, a deciding factor is I have to see that there's been success. It would be really nice if they did have the credentials that, yes, they've actually worked in medical review. You know, someone that's been there, done that, I'm going to be far more trusting. Unfortunately, I've had to play cleanup sometimes where folks have given misinformation. You know, if they didn't know what the rule book was and they were going by what they learned on the fly, like a lot of folks, that's going to just... be a cost that doesn't end up having that positive return, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of folks out there, I think, that are trying to be helpful. Just make sure they have the right tools.
Yeah, and if I got hit with a Target Probe and Educate, is it safe to say I wouldn't be hit again for 12, 24, 36 months, or can I be hit again?
Yeah, so it actually is a 3-round setup. So from round one, it is going to be based on your success or lack of success in that first 20 to 40 charts. And so each MAC, and this is incredible to me, little known fact, each MAC gets to make up their rule of what is the successful threshold that you graduate versus going to the next round. So for instance, CGS is at 25%. If you have a 25% or less error rate by dollars paid versus dollars withheld, 25% or less, you graduate, you're done. And then you're exactly right, Michael. You won't have this again for at least 12 months. Yeah. But then NGS is the most difficult with a 15%, and Palmetto's in the middle with 20%. So again, the three MACs are differing in what do they think is a tolerable amount of error rate. And again, they can put you on TPE for up to 3 rounds. You can always appeal, but again, talk about, like you mentioned, the burden and the financial hit and the cash flow and the resources used. It's huge. And then they threaten you that if you don't pass the 3rd round, that they're going to pass your name on to CMS. And they've threatened that there could be extrapolation and all kinds of terrifying things. Thankfully, all I've seen so far is you end up doing 4th round, but there are those possibilities. They do still say that they could do these other things.
Yeah. So sounds like to me, I would be hiring you first so I don't have to go through round 2 or 3. I can tell you that.
That's right. Our goal, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's just nice to have somebody who you can trust to come alongside and say, hey, I've done this before, because it sounds like a very stressful process.
It is. It's stressful for the team, especially when you feel like you're not quite sure of their next steps and you're not quite sure what are they really looking for. I usually meet people after they fail round one and they come to me because, you know, they've had, I just had one last week, 100% error rate because of the way they did their face-to-face documentation. And so it was a real paradigm shift and an eye opener when I looked at a couple charts and I shared with them, here's the reason. And we just need to do things differently going forward. And you won't have this issue because the rest of their records look great. It was just that face-to-face issue. But that's 100% denial just for that one thing. Mm.
So what are some of the more common issues or deficiencies that MACs find or identify during the audit process?
Face-to-face is typically number one. Now, sometimes they designate it as two different denial codes, but when you add up the actual face-to-face visit and the certification of the face-to-face error, when you add those up, it's always at the top. Underneath that, many times the MACs are looking at longer lengths of stays, at least a recert, and they're denying for medical necessity of nursing. So they're saying, hey, we aren't seeing that there's some impact of this nurse. They're just out there, you know, doing vitals and doing some generalized best practice teaching. There doesn't seem to be a true need. And they really kind of define that typically for the skill of assessment that there's been changes in condition, changes in treatments or meds in the last 3 to 4 weeks. So if there hasn't been that, they're denying right and left for that as well.
Are you seeing an increase in the percentage of target probe and educates?
There has seemed to be an uptick. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that varies also by MAP. Palmetto, of course, is the kind of owner, if you will, of the RCD states. And so those are the folks under review choice demonstration where they're getting approval from the MAT up front before they go in. And well, not before they go in, but after they've been in and developed their plan of care by their assessment, they provide just that initial documentation and then they give them a stamp of approval. So those folks aren't seeing the same sort of ADRs as the other two MACs are, although there are still some.
So what steps should an agency take if they receive unfavorable findings from the MAC audit?
Right. So first thing is looking at what does the actual denial say, and then looking at your own record, see if number one, do you agree with it? Number two, ask questions. Take the opportunity that is offered by the MAC for education. Ask those clarifying questions because I need to determine, is this an error by the MAC, because they do have some, or is this my own lack of documentation, or is it my misunderstanding of the policy? Do I need to change my own processes? Was it just a simple error that I need to ensure that I do a better QA, that I just missed something? And if you think you have what it takes that to meet that that regulation and you've been denied, of course, I'm taking that to the appeal. The first level of appeal goes right back to the MAC. And typically they stand by their man, right? They stay the same thing unless you have new documentation to offer. But then there are two other levels. There's one by the qualified independent contractor or QIC. And then we can even go to the ALJ, which is where we typically have more success, although not to the level we've seen historically. Even they are getting very nitpicky.
You've alluded a little bit to this, but I want to ask more specifically, how can agencies take the results of the MAC audit to improve their operations within their agency, even if the findings were favorable?
Yeah, if it's favorable, of course, that is, you know, that's your boost that, yes, we are doing these things right, and it is for a great reason, and we're going to continue to do those things. And when we find those unfavorable, we do need to drill down and determine, again, was this just a, you know, just one clinician? Is it my process? Is it something with my EMR that's lacking? Do I need to create a template? So yeah, absolutely. That is such a huge piece of this. And many of the providers that I've helped, that's one thing they do say is, even though this has been painful, when we've had a chance to work together, they're like, wow, we've learned so much. We now feel like we are experts in this, which, you know, too bad that they weren't there before, but now they're experts and they really feel like they can meet that bar each time then.
Yeah. So if, let's say you're an agency and you're audited, and let's say you're outsourcing your coding and your billing. All right. This is a kind of a personal question. I'm curious. Do you have, when you get audited, do you share that with the people that maybe you're teamed up with in terms of vendors like that to say, hey, you know, we got to look at this or look at that or whatever the case may be?
They absolutely should. And I've been on those calls as a team to kind of break it down as to, okay, who kind of owns each part. Many times, though, I'm not really usually finding that it's the coder's fault, if you will. Now, sometimes they'll say they're denying because the face-to-face doesn't match the primary diagnosis on the claim, which comes from the coder. But the problem was when we dove in, we found that the face-to-face said one thing, and then the admitting clinician said another thing. So the coder was kind of in the middle. Right. Now, unfortunately, they followed what the nurse said. And really, it's all about what that face-to-face says. So, yeah, it's typically that we just didn't come together as a team to create that consistent message and picture. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Nat, you're clearly well-educated in this space. And really appreciate you spending the past 30 minutes with us going through this. Before we close out, though, is there any question we didn't ask, or is there anything that we need to make sure that we, you know, come across on the podcast today to give our listeners kind of any information that we, you know, we forgot to cover?
I think you've covered it very well. I will add that get to know your MAC's website, because they each do have a checklist that really mirrors the medical review process. So put yourself through that. It's like having the test before you have to take it, right? We know where those answers are. Let's make sure that our records are also meeting those standards before someone else looks at them.
You know, you bring up, this is like my kids' school. Like, now they're in college, but when they're in high school, you know, after COVID, it's like they got to retake tests all the time. They were given the test before they took tests. You know, when I was in school, that didn't happen. We didn't have the Google. Nope. We didn't have YouTube. Nope. I would have been a straight A student. See, I'm a little saddened by this. Now I see all this. You got AI. I would have dominated in high school, just so you guys know.
I would have
dominated. But that it wasn't there for me at the time. But Annette, gosh darn, you know, that great podcast. I mean, I'll tell you what, this is one topic we haven't covered. It's a topic that, you know, a lot of people have asked us to cover. So we really appreciate you making time. And I knew a little bit about what you were talking about, you know, but I'm not from the provider side. We've got some players on our team from the provider side for those particular reasons. But I really think you put a great feel on this that, you know, there's some things you can do proactive and you should start doing immediately. I love the recommendation to go to the website and kind of get that outline. I mean, I would tell you what, if anybody didn't get anything out of this call, get that out of the call. Go to the website, get that checklist, because, you know, prevention's always the best thing, right? If you're ready for it, it sure does make that experiences easier than what it would be if you didn't have it, because nobody wants to go through it, but it's inevitable, it sounds like.
That's right, sir. You got it.
So Annette, will you share before we close out where our listeners can reach you and what Provider Insights offers to agencies who might be struggling with their survey processes or audit
Thank
processes?
You. Yeah, both. Thank you so much, Hannah. Sure. So my website's just providerinsights.com. Nice and easy. There's a place you can click to say, you know, you want to be contacted. You can sign up for my listserv. And our basic model is just to, again, bridge that gap between Medicare ease. What are the expectations? And real life, you're out there caring for patients and ensuring that you're ready for survey or for audit. So anything I can do to assist either proactively or even, you know, reactively, if you've been chosen for one of these, please let me know. If you can't find that checklist on your MAC website, reach out. I'm glad to send it to you.
That's awesome.